Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Well, good morning. You are listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. A single cell is the smallest living thing on Earth. And yet the biggest living things are also made of cells, lots of them, all working together. Cells come in all shapes and sizes. We have muscle cells, skin cells, blood cells. A tree has root cells and leaf cells. Bacteria cells can be round like a ball or shaped like a rod. Cells are fundamental to life as we know it, and they can all do the most amazing thing. They can clone themselves and split in half into two new cells in a process known as mitosis. Joining me this week is cell biologist Amy Eckert from the University of Sussex, who researches how cancer cells undergo division. When she's not in the lab, she can be found organising PubHD in Brighton, on the committee for the British Science Association, or on stage as her alter ego, the infamous drag queen, Dr. Jiggs Boson. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Matilda.
How are you?
I'm wonderful this morning, and I'm feeling a bit emotional about that beautiful intro you did about cells. I just love cells so much. They make me so happy.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, I wanted to ask, let me guess, is Jiggs Boson a play on Higgs boson?
It sure is. When I first had the idea to do this sort of science communication performance, I asked my friends, I really need a good punny science stage name. And my friend, shout out to Sam Lake, who's a wonderful stand-up comedian, he immediately fired back with Jiggs Boson.
Oh, wow.
And then I tweaked the spelling because instead of B-O-S-O-N, like the particle.
Yes.
I added a W because it's like a ribbon, like a bow. Because I really love dressing like 1950s. So my bows are on, and I added a fictional doctorate because of my ego.
Brilliant. Well, we'll be hearing more about the creation of Jiggs later in the show, as well as Amy's favourite protein and what it's like being a cancer researcher. Now, for our experiment this week, we're going to be creating some cell division of our own. Amy, can you please tell the listeners what they need if they want to take part?
Yes, if you want to experiment along at home, you will need a plastic water bottle, half a litre or a litre one will do, some dried baker's yeast, some sugar and some warm water.
All very easy, and you can all buy in
your
local supermarket. Yes, balloon, very important. You need a balloon. Behind the producing desk, we also have Louise, and she has a brain teaser for us today.
Good morning. So today, it's more of a trivia question for you. So I just want to know approximately how many cells are there in the human body? So if you want to tweet your answers to at Science Mixtape or at Soho Radio, and yeah, we'll check back in later and see if anyone gets it right.
I can't even begin to think how many cells there must be in a human body. They're so small, you can't really see them with your naked eye. Like, how do you even count them? I'm guessing you already know the answer, Amy.
I've got some idea. Spoiler alert, it's a lot.
Now, on with the mixtape element. What is your first song today and why?
So my first song today, I've chosen it because I used to live in London with my mum. Used to live in North London, and this song was out at the time, and it always reminds me of walking along the Finchley Road with her and going to get bagels from this amazing bakery called Daniel's Bakery. I think it's still there. So yeah, this is Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve.
Cause it's a bittersweet symphony.
The cell was first discovered by Robert Hooke when looking at a tiny piece of plant material under the microscope. He thought it looked strangely similar to the small rooms which monks inhabited, known as cellula, and so gave it that name.
I love the origin of names, like where they come from, because we all just think of cells as cells, and actually it's because he thought it looked like a prison.
Delightful.
So Amy, what got you interested in studying cell division in the first place?
I was really lucky. When I was at school, I had a really brilliant biology teacher for my A-levels. And he helped me get really excited about cells, and And he describes how cells are responsible for everything we do and feel and experience, and how cells just get on with it and we don't even notice what they're doing. And I just thought, oh my goodness, cells are amazing. And then I went to university to study biochemistry, and I still became, I became more interested in cancer cell biology. And then I realised...
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
It's so true. Like, anytime we grow, anytime we cut ourselves and need to repair our bodies...
Exactly.
That is mitosis happening, isn't it?
Yeah. We all started life as one single cell, the fertilised zygote. So, and then we just grew from there. It's just amazing.
Into however many millions, trillions we are now.
Yes. Can't give away the brain teaser yet.
So what happens when a cell starts to divide?
So in the human body, a cell can only divide if it's received instructions to by other cells in the body.
Uh-huh.
So this helps to keep everything in check. The human body works, it's like a sort of socialist utopia. Everybody has to work together for the benefit of the entire organism.
For the good of the colony.
Exactly. So when a cell has received the go-ahead to divide, it sort of gets itself ready. It checks that it has enough raw materials, that it's got no DNA damage, and then it will start building the proteins it needs to get to do the cell division.
So it's quite a big deal, isn't it? To completely copy yourself. I think I heard that there's, in every cell, 2 to 3 meters of DNA, if you were to unwind it all.
Yeah, that's right.
And they've got to copy all of that first, yes. Don't they? As well as, recreate all the little machines inside them that do all their little jobs.
Absolutely. And also, what makes this even more crazy is every cell in the body has the same genome, but all our cells look different. As you were saying in the intro, we've got skin cells, nerve cells, brain cells, heart cells, gut cells. So they've all got the same DNA, but different genes are turned on and off to determine what they look like. So when a cell divides, it's got to remember what switches have been turned on and off.
Right.
So it's got to remember and replicate that as well. It's got to remember the epigenetics.
So it's got to, it's got to copy all of the DNA, and then it's got to remember which bits are on and off and put the labels back on.
Exactly.
Man, how much do we understand of how this works?
Oh, that's a great question. We understand it quite well in yeast cells because yeast is the classic model organism for cell cycle biologists, and a lot of what we know about the human cell cycle comes from yeast, and yeast is a really powerful tool. People still use it in the lab. We have a rough idea how it works, but we're still discovering things all the time. We're trying to work out, for example, how cells modulate the different steps that they take. So for example, when it's copying the DNA, mm-hmm. it might encounter a problem, and so the copying DNA stage may take a bit longer than normal. So then the cell has to be aware of that and account for that in terms of getting ready for the timing for the next stage, if that makes any sense at all.
Okay, so you're talking about stages. Our cells kind of all the time just churning away and just being like copy, split, or do they kind of pause in the middle? How many cells would be dividing right now in our body?
Oh, great question. It really depends on the type of cell. So some cells in our bodies, like some of our brain cells, don't divide at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a sort of quiescence, that's called, so resting.
I love it, just having a chill.
Yeah. Our skin cells, our gut cells, our red blood cells, so anything that has a high turnover is dividing all the time. So every minute we're making about 40,000 new skin cells.
Mm-hmm.
Every second, we're making about 2 million red blood cells.
Wow.
And yeah, every minute, I can't remember off the top of my head now, but it's, again, many millions of gut cells being made.
All the time.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Now, you mentioned about yeast, and mm-hmm. that is what we're going to be looking at in our experiment.
Yes.
But before we get there, let's have your second song. What is it and why?
So my second song is Electric Lady by Janelle Monáe, and I just really love this song. It's so happy and positive, and it's all about celebrating a female friendship, I think. Like, look at you, you're so awesome and wonderful and beautiful, yay!
Water turn to wine at
There are more than 500 species and thousands of varieties of yeast, and 25% of yeast genes can be found in the human genome.
Oh, I'm aware I'm not staying in my lane here. So, if you take one of the human cell cycle proteins called CDK1 and put it in a yeast cell, the yeast is totally fine, totally happy, because they're so similar. But I think it doesn't work the other way around, which is strange.
Because we're more complex and we need like more complex controls. Yeah.
Yes.
There we go. So you were saying that yeast is actually used a lot by cell biologists to study the cell cycle because it's quicker and simpler to look at than a human cell.
Exactly.
And that's what we're going to do today, listeners. We are going to grow some yeast. So Amy, I've got lots of things in front of me. What should I start with?
Yeah, so you've got some hand hot water there. So could you pour that into our plastic bottle, please?
Okay, pouring away. So this is the hand hot water going into my plastic bottle. Beautiful. What next?
And then you've just got some ordinary caster sugar. So add that, please.
Okay. Ooh, try not to spill. Ooh, yep, there we go. Oh, it's a snow shower into the bottle. What next?
And then just an ordinary sachet of baker's yeast from the supermarket. Fast action dried yeast.
Okay, so in goes my yeast. And for anyone who hasn't seen yeast before, I'm not a baker, so I hadn't. It just looks kind of like a cross between sugar and sand. It's sandy coloured, but not as granular. And but a similar kind of size to sugar crystals. So I'm pouring that all in there now. And it's making my water look kind of lovely and sandy.
Great. So if you pop the lid on and give it a mix, we want the sugar to dissolve and the yeast to wake up. Because yeast is, you know, like us, it's a living thing. It needs to be warm, it needs something to eat, and it needs oxygen.
So is that what the sugar's for? The sugar is something for it to eat?
Yep, that's its food.
What delicious food. Yucky. Okay, so I've mixed it all up and now it looks like fully mixed in sort of, again, sandy colour water, and it's got a little bit of a froth on top.
Yeah.
Like the head on a beer.
Got some micro brewing in the studio. And then so what we're going to do is as the yeast wakes up and starts breathing, very non-technical word, respiring, we're going to put a balloon over the bottleneck, and as the yeast makes carbon dioxide from oxygen, just like us, it's gonna hopefully fill up the balloon.
Okay, so I've got my balloon. It is not full at all. It is hanging down very floppily. And we are hoping that by the end of this show, we can prove that the yeast has been multiplying because it will have made so much carbon dioxide, it will have blown up our balloon.
Exactly.
Right, we're gonna put this here and come back to it at the end of the show.
Lovely.
So in terms of talking about cell division, like how long would we expect it to take for a yeast cell to divide?
So a yeast cell takes about 1 hour. And my
so by the end of the show, we should have doubled the yeast in our bottle, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Now, so you were very specific about having the hand hot water and stuff. I mean, if we didn't get the conditions correct, we didn't give them enough sugar, or if the water was too cold, what would that do to the rate of division?
It would slow it down. It wouldn't necessarily stop it. Yeast aren't too fussy. They would continue trying to divide regardless, unless the conditions were so extreme that they couldn't. So, for example, if the water was freezing cold or boiling hot that it killed them, or if there was no sugar at all. Yes.
So is that a way that we can control cell cycles by making the cell warmer or colder? Is that how cryogenics works, to freeze someone, to preserve them?
Oh, that's an amazing question. So, yeah, with yeast, because it's single-celled eukaryotes, it's simple, we can, you know, just dry it and have it in packets on the supermarket. With an entire human body, it's a bit trickier. I can freeze my cancer cells, and people freeze their yeast and cancer cells in the lab, so we keep them in big freezers and wake them up when we need them. But yeah, in terms of a complex organism like a human, the tricky thing is to do with the brain, because once a brain has been without oxygen for a few minutes, so much damage happens to the nerve cells that we just don't know how to undo this. Right. We don't know how to fix it. We don't know how to reboot it. And we don't fully understand how memories and personality relate to all this. So you can replace organs with fresh ones. You can restart a heart to a certain extent, but we don't know how to restart the brain. Yeah,
Okay, so it works. You can freeze and dry simple things, but yes, not yet the human body. I just want to pick you up on that. You were, again, talking about working in cancer cells. What is it like being a cancer researcher?
I love it. It's enormous fun, but it can be incredibly frustrating because I'm personally quite emotionally attached to my work. And so sometimes if things aren't going well, I beat myself up and I think, this didn't work. I'm the worst human ever. But it's absolutely fascinating. I get to see something different down the microscope every day. I'm working with like real living things. I love it. It's not glamorous. I generate a lot of plastic waste most of the time. It's fascinating. It's a real puzzle. And instead of like Lego bricks or puzzle pieces, it's with DNA and proteins. I love it.
And why are proteins important in cell division?
They do all the jobs needed to physically copy the DNA as well as pulling the cell into two. Proteins do all the jobs in our bodies, not just cell division. They do everything.
Like digestion?
Yes. Fighting off infections, repairing the DNA if it gets broken, shuttling things in and out of the cell. Exactly, yeah.
So they're kind of like the conductors orchestrating the cell division.
Absolutely.
Ah, I love it. And you look at one, like how many of these conductors do we think there are?
Oh, goodness. There's thousands of different human proteins.
But involved in cell cycles? Wow. Thousands. Yes. That's incredible. Time for your third song. What are you having and why?
So, coming back to the theme of drag, my gateway into the fantastical world of drag was when I was really sad during my master's because I was really stressed out. I discovered RuPaul's Drag Race and I thought, oh my goodness, this is the best show ever. And so that's why my third song is Cover Girl by RuPaul.
Stroll down the runway, another payday, cover of magazine. They see me, they wanna be me. I am the fantasy. Cover girl, put the bass in your walk. Head to toe, let your whole body talk. Cover girl, put the bass in your walk. Head to toe, let your whole body talk. Two grommets, Chinese, red carpet TV, valet my limousine.
Interestingly, the largest cell in the human body is the female egg, and the smallest cell is the male sperm.
Now, from cell division to a division of your own, Amy.
Whoa, I see what you did there.
Probably one of the worst tenuous links ever. So you're a scientist by day and sometimes a drag queen by night.
Yes.
And I want to ask, I'm so interested in this, I want to ask you all about how you created Jigs. We know how you came up with the name. Mm-hmm. But other than watching RuPaul's Drag Race, like, how were you inspired to create her?
So I was at a local show in Brighton watching one of my friends who's a drag queen. Her name is Crystal and she's absolutely wonderful. And she announced on stage that she was doing an open sort of competition that anybody could take part in. They could be in costume or not, in drag, whatever gender. Sort of a drag competition called Lip Sync for Your Life, a little bit like on RuPaul's Drag Race. And just immediately it popped into my head, oh my goodness, I need to incorporate science into this. This has to happen. And it sounds sounds scary, but I'll regret it if I don't do it. So I donned a lab coat and some extravagant makeup and I trotted my way down to the bar one day and I'd made a mix out of Tom Lehrer's The Element song.
Love that.
And various pop songs that referenced science, even if it was a really sort of vague link, like Diana Ross, Chain Reaction.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of thing. And they loved it. And
so you got up and you performed that as the lip sync?
I did, yes.
Amazing. And you've carried on with Jigs. Tell me what you do now.
Yeah, so that I eventually started working with my friend Steve Cross, who's a brilliant comedian and science communicator. And he said, Amy, this would be a really great sort of Brighton science variety cabaret show. Let's do this. And I said, okay. So we've set up a science cabaret show in Brighton, fronted by me as Dr. Jigs Boson. And I wanted to put like the variety back into variety shows. So I have science comedians, musicians, drag artists as well, all sort of sharing the stage. And it makes for a really unique, interesting night that I think can only exist in Brighton, really. Because we get drag fans in to see the drag queens or drag kings. And then, bam, we hit them with some science. And then the science fans who come, they get introduced to drag and everybody's happy and everybody has a wonderful time.
What do you think is the allure of a drag night?
For me, it is... I love... One of my favourite things is I love watching brilliant people be brilliant. Like, I love to watch people be really great at their craft or whatever job they have. So there's that. And I love the idea of drag being, you know, a powerful feminine character. I love the idea that it's using femininity to command attention and take up space, because that often does not happen in the real world. So it's a wonderful escape for me, I think.
Especially in a science world as well.
Where yes, exactly.
Still underrepresented and everything. Oh, that's yes. Brilliant. When you first created Jigs, I mean, was it she just suddenly appeared as a character, or there was kind of a process of finding her?
I'm not a great performance artist. I don't really have a performance background. So yeah, Jigs is just what I wish I could be. She is just a bit more confident and a bit ruder, and yeah, so there's no sort of complex sort of story. Maybe I'll think of one if I get a bit more creative. But yeah, Jigs is just basically Amy after a you know, having
a couple of drinks.
Yeah, a couple of gins. Yeah, can I say that?
Of course you can. Yeah, licensed to just let your wild side out a bit, I suppose.
Exactly. Licensed to flirt with the front row of the audience. Exactly.
And know that they're not going to hold it against you because it's not you.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so fun. And what was the name of your night again?
It's got a very concise name. It's Dr. Jigs Boson's Charming Science Friends.
Great. Well, what is your song number four?
So song number four is Dramaphone by Caravan Palace, because purely for the reason I love this band. I've seen them twice and they're so much fun to watch. And yeah, I love it. Sassy sisters, dressed in nothing but top underwear. Silly swingers, get your feeling off the spell. Sassy sisters, come and taste as sweet as can be. Silly swingers.
Mistakes made during mitosis can result in changes in the DNA that can lead to genetic disorders.
Science News!
E-tattoos turn knuckles into smartphone controls.
Cutting-edge stem cell therapy proves safe.
Boaty McBoatface set sail yesterday on his first ever voyage.
Scientists discover what keeps the world's most indestructible animals alive.
Chemist ants making their own antibiotic mixtures to protect their colonies.
Scientists have stored a movie, a computer virus, and an Amazon gift card in a stretch of DNA.
Oh my god, so ants can make their own antibiotics?
Yeah.
They could solve our antibiotics crisis. Tell me all about this.
Yeah, we have so much to learn from them. So it's this particular species of ant called the wood ant. And normally, other species of ants keep their colonies safe from diseases, because an ant nest is a perfect place for germs to grow, because it's, you know, a warm, humid place and it's full of, you know, like food, like rotting leaf matter and sort of dead insects. So other ant species sort of obsessively groom each other and keep the colony clean. But wood ants, they take it one step further. They collect a tree resin, which is found to be naturally antimicrobial. So, oh goodness, I can't even pronounce that. Antimicrobial.
Very nice.
Yes. So what the scientists did is they took some of this tree resin and they stored it with some ants for 2 weeks. And had an area which did not contain the resin, and they found that the resin experiment had a 50% larger fungus-free area.
Wow.
So clever. We could learn so much from ants.
Yeah. Let's get in there and like find out what they're making and steal it. Lou, tell me about this DNA that's storing a whole movie.
I know. Pretty crazy, huh? So Yaniv Ehrlich and Dina Zielinski, sorry guys if I didn't say that right, from the New York Genome Center and Columbia University, have managed to fit a computer virus, a movie, and an Amazon gift card into a strand of DNA. And obviously, I don't know if people know, but apparently storing things in DNA isn't new. But there's been a few problems in the past, which is why the guys, they had a look into sort of a new way of thinking. They started using fountain codes, which is a style of coding that partitions data into small packets or droplets. And by doing it this way, you're able to recover the whole set of data, even if you only look at a small bit of the data, which makes it easier for DNA because it's obviously made up of all tiny little bits. And by using this technique and placing it in the DNA, they've managed to store something that would have weighed 150 grams in just a single strand of DNA, which, I mean, I don't know how much that weighs, but like,
it's gonna be tiny.
Literally nothing. So although this seems really, like, obviously this is really exciting for the future of storage.
Does that mean that like our memory sticks could be kind of DNA memory sticks?
Whoa. Maybe, yeah. I mean, but you'd lose it. Like, it just...
Or you could have a DNA computer system, maybe. I don't know, like, yeah, like a DNA hard drive.
You'd lose it. I don't know, it's too small. And apparently currently it costs $3,500 to do this at the moment, so
won't be getting that anytime soon then.
No, but yeah, give it like
but that's the sort
10,
of area
years.
It's headed, right?
Yeah,
this is crazy. And that's the same as the, so one of the stories I picked is just because I was like, if I was a science fiction writer, this would be blowing my mind and I'd write a book all about it. It's this idea. So there's some scientists at Saarland University and they've been collaborating with Google to create these e-tattoos, and they use conductive ink to print wires and electrodes onto temporary tattoo paper.
Oh my gosh.
And then just like a normal temporary tattoo, you can rub it onto your skin, you know, with the water or whatever, and it stays there for a couple of days. And then they call them skin marks, and they're saying that because skin has these quite good elastic properties, you know, skin can bend and stretch and you can kind of change it into lots of different shapes. It means that you can have multiple commands coming from one area. So here are some examples of the things they've tried to do. You could have one of these skin marks on your finger and then slide your other finger along it to turn the volume up and down on your smartphone. But when you bend that finger, it becomes kind of triangular and it could become a play or pause button. Another one is if you had these on your knuckles, when your hand is in a fist, the four knuckles could be four different buttons. But when your hand is flat, it could become more like a slider and again, like a volume control. Well, one of my personal favorites is they were like, the team has also placed a heart-shaped tattoo over a volunteer's birthmark, which can glow whenever a nominated loved one is available for a phone call. Or other tattoos in the shapes of like your apps to give you notifications. They would like light up. I mean, it's just crazy what they are thinking. It's like skin art to a whole new level. Now, it's not going to be sort of available for people anytime soon. I think they're looking at about 10 years before they think touch-sensitive tattoos will be mainstream use. And their main challenge is, at the moment, the tattoos are still kind of connected to a little microcontroller that can just works out all the signals and transmits them to the smartphone. And they want to make that smaller because at the moment you'd have to wear it on your wristband and it's quite round your wrist on a band and it's really bulky. But I just never thought of the future like that.
Oh my god, that's insane.
Amazing.
Amy, tell me your next story.
Yeah, so this is a story from some scientists in Japan, and they have managed to halt the degeneration of a patient's eye. So this is age-related macular degeneration, so that's age-related loss of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And they use something called induced pluripotent stem cells. So stem cells are a cell that can turn into any other type of cell in the body.
So they don't have all those labels to make them one thing already.
Exactly. A nice analogy I like is that stem cells are like children. Their future is set out before them, and depending on the environment that you put that child in, depending on what education is available to that child, they choose the career that they want, like a radio presenter or a doctor. And once they become that specialist career, it's quite hard to change into something else.
True.
So what the induced means is that they take the patient's own cells, so that won't be a graft rejection, and they bathe those cells in some proteins in order to turn that cell back into a stem cell. So it's sort of like turning back time, really, because we all started life as a ball of stem cells.
That could become anything. Yeah.
Exactly, to make all the different organs we have. So, yeah, and they used these cells and replaced some cells in the back of her eye. And even though her sight hasn't improved too much, it's like sort of stopped
degrading.
The disease progression, yeah.
Wow.
And that happened in December, and there's been no sign of side effects or rejection. As I was researching the story, I was also reading about how some cowboy doctors in the United States were sort of doing this sort of claiming to do stem cell therapies, but it going horribly wrong and patients going blind. They were essentially taking very crude mixtures of cells from the patients, like taking some fat and not processing them properly and just injecting a load of cells into people's eyes. And of course, your body is not going to like that. A huge immune reaction. And yeah, so that's really bad. So if done safely, as these Japanese scientists have done, then
there seems to be no side effects.
This could be a viable medical option for the future, yeah.
That's really exciting. Now, Lou, I'm sure all our listeners are dying to hear about Boaty McBoatface.
I know. Woo!
He set sail. Tell us all about it.
Everyone's favourite boat. So obviously you're probably all a little confused because we all know that there was the vote to see what the new Voyager ship should be called, and Boaty McBoatface was a popular choice, obviously, because it's a great name, but that boat actually ended up being called the RS Sir David Attenborough, beautiful man.
He is.
There's no denying that. But this Boaty McBoatface is actually a series of robot submarines.
Oh, there's more than one?
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that.
I know. So Boaty McBoat faces. I don't know what the plural term is.
Fake eye.
So the submarines will be used to survey cold deep waters that help to regulate the Earth's climate. They'll be set out in the Antarctic Peninsula into an area called the Orkney Passage, and basically they're going to go underwater and sort of see if they can have a sort of an impact on the Earth's climate, which I think is really interesting. I mean, the
it's
initial
really important.
Yeah. Definitely. So Boaty McBoatface lives on.
Great. Yay. And hopefully will live on many times. And then my other story was tardigrades are probably the coolest animals. They are the world's toughest animal. They are only 1 millimeter long, but they can live anywhere. They've been found at the bottom of the ocean and on top of the Himalayas. They've even been found, there was an experiment where they put them outside the International Space Station and got them to live on the side. And the lack of pressure would kill a human in minutes, but these tardigrade were like, not bothered, had sex, reproduced, it's all good. they can be boiled at 150 degrees without dying. They can be frozen to nearly absolute zero, and that's more than minus 270 degrees. So they're really hard to kill. And they can be completely dried out like our yeast was. But they are more complicated than yeast because they're more than one cell. They're a whole little animal.
Yeah.
And now researchers from North Carolina have discovered that the reason they can survive drying out is because they've evolved these unique genes which allow them to survive it. These are called tardigrade-specific intrinsically disordered proteins. and the reason...
Aren't scientists witty?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it says on the tin. But these are exciting because these proteins, if we learn how to use them, we can put them into other things like bacteria or certain enzymes. And hopefully they would then protect those things from being dried out. So this could be really useful for protecting crops from drought or preserving medicines without needing a fridge, because often refrigeration in really sort of remote areas is quite difficult. So that is very cool and positive. Enough science news for today. Amy, what is your fifth song and why?
So my fifth song is Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits. And I chose this because me and my group of close girlfriends, we love going to a particular pub in Brighton called the Hope and Ruin. And every month they have a fantastic sort of classic, cheesy 70s, 80s, 90s rock night. And we love it. And I think the next one is tonight. So yay. So this is for my friends.
And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. He's got a daytime saving it up Friday night. With the Sultans, with the Sultans of Swing.
Most proteins have a lifespan of 2 days or less. However, the recent discovery of extremely long-lived proteins may provide scientists with insight into cell aging and neurodegeneration.
As we said, proteins do everything.
Yes.
Now, Amy, you said earlier that they are the conductors in this in the cell cycle.
Yeah. I think maybe my mistake, a better analogy could be a human cell is like a car, and the proteins controlling the cell cycle, some of them act as accelerators to push the cell through the cell cycle, and some of them act as brakes to pause it when things aren't going quite to plan, like if there's some DNA damage or one of the chromosomes isn't attached properly to the threads that pull the cell into two.
And it says, hold up, wait, we need to do some repair.
Exactly.
And then it's like, it's repaired, go again.
Exactly.
Ah, okay. Now I kind of get a little bit more why we need like 1,000 of them if the DNA is like 3 meters long and they're all checking it. And
absolutely. There's so many switches and feedback loops all coordinating everything and making sure everything is working.
So you work on one protein in particular, right?
I do, yes.
Would you say this was your favourite protein?
I don't know, because it doesn't behave itself all of the time. And I'm trying to work out what it's doing. And I don't really know. It's called Great Wall Kinase. So great,
that's a strong name.
It is a strong name. Great Wall is in Great Wall of China. So it acts as an accelerator to one protein and a brake on another. So
multi-talented.
It is. It's a multi-talented protein. It basically blocks the proteins that want to turn mitosis off. So the mitosis proteins do need to be turned off when the cell has finished dividing, because you don't want to immediately start dividing again, because that would cause problems. So Great Wall makes sure that the turning off doesn't happen until the right time.
Right. Okay. Until
until
everything is finished.
Exactly.
Great. And how do you go about studying what it does?
So we can use genetics and drugs to turn off this protein.
And see what the effect is.
Exactly. And so I use a lot of microscopy.
So when you turn it off, does the cell then just kind of divide again and again?
Oh, it tries to divide, but it goes wrong.
Ah.
Yeah. So sometimes cells are... The effects are really variable, and that's what we're trying to put our finger on. Sometimes the cells continue dividing and they're happy, which is very strange. Sometimes the cell will try to divide, but the DNA gets all tangled up because mitosis has been switched off too early, and the cell will hit the self-destruct button and destroy itself. And sometimes the cell will push through division and it will end up with an unequal division.
And how is... So how is like the cell division? Is it like the cell cycle goes wrong and then it gets out of control and that causes cancer? Or is it like something else goes wrong which then causes the cell to divide out of control?
Yeah, it's more the second one. So cancer is what happens when cells in our bodies, through genetic mutations in our DNA acquired in life usually, give some cells in our bodies a unfair survival advantage. Like they will start growing a bit more than they're supposed to, or they will survive things that they shouldn't. And that will eventually manifest itself into unregulated cell division, because the mutations that allow cancer cells to grow mean that the cell division controls get hit by these mutations.
Basically, the brakes stop working.
Exactly, yes. The accelerator is always on and the brakes stop working. Exactly.
Wow. I can't even imagine how you begin to unpick what they all do in working it out. we're coming to the end of our show. I guess it's time for us to see what has happened to our yeast and to reveal the answer to our brain teaser. Now, I'm really impressed. Our
yeast amazing.
Has gone from a floppy, empty balloon on top of a bottle to something the size of a grapefruit.
It's beautiful.
Really cool. You should definitely try this one at home, listeners. It's really simple to do. And it's, you know, within an hour, you've doubled your yeast. You've made a bunch of CO2. We're going to tweet a picture of the before and after. So head to Twitter if you want to see what our balloon looks like. And now, Lou, have we had any guesses on the brain teaser?
Yes, we have. So Miriam thinks 40 trillion. And so for everyone listening at home who wants to know, it is 37.2 trillion.
Whoa.
Which is, I mean, that's a lot.
That is
an awful lot.
That's a kind of space type number. And so this was actually calculated by a team of scientists from Italy, Greece and Spain. It's kind of a tricky thing to do because not all our cells are the same size or weight or even the same distance from each other. So how do you go about estimating them? And what they did was they estimated first how many of each kind of cell we have. Like we have 2 billion hot muscle cells and 50 billion fat cells. And then they added these all together. So a really long process.
That is very long, but that's now why it's our best guess.
Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. It's been so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Ah, it's been brilliant. And your song choices have been amazing.
Oh, thank you.
What's next for you and for Jigs?
So I've just heard some very exciting news that the Green Man Festival would like a show of Dr. Jigs Boson and her charming science friends. So that's very exciting.
Oh, brilliant.
And there is one more festival in the works, but I can't tell you just yet, but I can in a couple of weeks. So I'm very excited and I can't wait to see how Dr. Jigs does glamping.
And what is the final song to play us out on, please?
So the final song is for my father. One of my motivations for getting into cancer research was losing my father quite young. So, and I remember that this was his absolutely favourite song. So this is Fast Car by Tracy Chapman.
You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights day out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world.